off to new topics now. With the, I think we pretty well killed the BCS theory, and so now we'll move on to other interesting things. So what I'd like to talk about for the next few days is a combination of model Hamiltonians, a little bit of quantum magnetism, and so let's say model Hamiltonians, a little bit of quantum magnetism, and high TC. Okay? So let's just begin with a model Hamiltonian, which is useful to study, that's called the extended Hubbard model. And so that's a Hamiltonian that would look like this in my usual notation. For the kinetic energy, not worry about the chemical potential term right now. Okay, so what is this? Kinetic energy. Okay, so this is a term which says that if you put two electrons on the same site, in the same orbital, if you like, and necessarily in a singlet state, because that's all you can do, then it costs you an energy U. So that's the Hubbard model. And then in addition to that, I've added an extra term which says that there's some interaction energy V if you put two electrons on nearest neighbor sites. And so, for instance, actually, when you look at this, basically, what have you got? Like, if you anti-commute, these sites are all different, or I and I plus delta are necessarily different. So you can anti-commute this through, and basically it's the density of electrons on one site times the density of electrons on the other site. That can only be zero if either site is empty or both sites are empty, or it can be one if both sites are singly occupied, or it can be two if either site is doubly occupied, or it can be four if they're both doubly occupied. So that's all the possibilities for this. Okay, and so to start the discussion, let's forget about the V. So start with that's the Hubbard model. So so what are the possibilities? Well, of course, there's many possibilities, but one of the possibilities is, for instance, there's many possibilities, so let's just talk about some interesting ones. Okay, so one interesting would be U less than zero. Okay? If U's less than zero, that's going to give you superconductivity. Right? And in fact, if you look like in Landau and Lipschitz stat mech book, I think, where they do fermions with weakly attractive interactions, it's essentially the negative U Hubbard model. Okay, so. Okay, another case is another interesting case is one electron per site, and U weak U. Okay. So what happens in the weak interaction? So if you have one electron per site and you have weak interactions, what happens to the system then? Okay, so just in terms of band theory, you've got this band, this cosine band, say in two or three dimensions. And you've got one electron that can be in either one of two spin states. So your Fermi energy would basically fill half the band, and you'd expect to have a good metal. Okay, and the effect of, I guess I meant positive repulsive interaction. We know that in Hartree-Fock, that will slightly renormalize the kinetic energy, and pretty much that's shift the chemical potential. Maybe that's pretty much it. Okay. So the point that I want to make here is that if you have in this model in band theory, if you have one electron per site, then the thing looks like a good metal. If you turn on a little bit of repulsive interaction, it's still going to look like a good metal with renormalized parameters. Okay. So the other limit, of course, is U large and positive. So what happens in that case? What do you think?
Still repulsive.
Still repulsive, yeah. So say, basically that says that there's a large cost to putting two electrons on the same site. The number of electrons you've got is enough to cover every site once. Yeah.
Then your band is going to be nearly completely full there, and you will get much lower density of doubly occupied sites.
I don't think that's giving you the lower density of occupied sites if you put something into every state and into every case state. I think you're going to really calculate the charge density. I think you're going to get two electrons. Actually, it probably won't work because of. Yeah, okay. I guess it would work in principle. But no. I mean, basically, what the system would like to do is have one electron per site and be stuck there. Okay. So this is called a it's called a Mott insulator. It basically says that you know, if it costs too much to put two electrons, so to take one from an occupied site and move it onto a doubly occupied site, then the electrons are stuck, and it acts like an insulator. Okay, so basically then you have a splitting of the band. This bandwidth is, depending on your dimensionality, say 8T for square lattice, or some larger number of T for so what happens is that it splits into a upper and lower Hubbard band, where the lower Hubbard band is filled, and there's a gap of U to the site to the empty upper Hubbard band. Okay. So that's the Mott insulator. Interesting, of course, that says nothing about the spin Because if you put one electron per site, that doesn't tell you anything about the spin state. And so this is 2 to the n fold degenerate. Okay, so you have this massively degenerate state. And so then the question is how is that degeneracy resolved? And the answer is it's resolved, if you like, in perturbation theory by virtual processes. Okay? So the virtual processes so if you like, you've got say you have 2 electrons. A simple way of thinking of it is that you've got 2 electrons that are in opposite states. This goes to and this costs you an energy U. And the hopping that occurred at amplitude T from kinetic energy. And so this gives you a lowering of energy. So if you work it through, it's minus 4 t squared over u for this process. But you also can see that if these two guys are in the same spin state, then this process can't happen. And so then delta E equals 0. Okay. So basically, the contribution of second order perturbation theory to the lowering of the energy depends on the spin state of a given pair. And to say this properly, what I would say is that if the pair of spins are in a relative singlet state, then the energy in second order perturbation theory is exactly minus 4 t squared over u. And if the pair is in a relative triplet state, then second order perturbation theory doesn't do anything to for it. Okay? Question?
It maybe I'm just being dense here, but why does the energy lower in the relative singlet case if we have u much, much greater than t?
Well, if you can see that it doesn't lower it very much in that case, right?
Right, but I mean.
But it does lower it because there is this virtual high energy excitation which allows the electrons to move around a bit. And so, you know, the that state is just I see a bunch of non-smiley faces here.
I'm a little confused about what the n fold degeneracy.
You like this part? Is this mm-hmm.
Could you explain that again?
Okay, well, every site, spin can be up or down. So there's n sites, 2 choices per site. Okay, so let's go on. What else? So that configuration is massively degenerate.
And
And so this argument here, this argument, by the way, there's a classic problem in Ashcroft and Mervin called the Hubbard model of the hydrogen atom. And the Hubbard model of the hydrogen atom just has these two terms in it. It has the hopping from one atom to the other of the electron. And it has the Hubbard term that says that if the two electrons happen to be on the same atom, then that costs you U.
Sorry, is that
a
hydrogen molecule?
Hydrogen molecule. Hubbard model of the hydrogen molecule.
Right.
And with two electrons, two atoms. And that's something that you can work through in a very straightforward way. And that gives you exactly this result. It says basically that the ground state will be a singlet. And, in that case, I think both the hybridization or the hopping and the Coulomb repulsion are large. Yeah, Charlie.
So the energy is lower if they're on the same side.
No, the energy is lower. So the question is, if you have one electron per side, okay, how is the energy lowered by the fact that one or the other, one, they can hop onto the same side, one can hop onto the side of the other and back, but only if it's in the right spin state.
Okay.
See? Yeah.
Why is it still an integrator if that's the case? Like, surely then they...
Yeah, because it's a virtual process. In other words, it's not actually, so turning on, I guess the question that you is relevant there is, what you're doing is you're starting with infinite U and turning it down from infinity. And at infinite U, the ground state is exactly degenerate, 2 to the n fold degenerate. The virtual hopping doesn't happen. And as you bring U down from infinity, then you start to mix in a little bit of these doubly ionized states, but only as I said, virtually. In other words, in reality, there's no actual holes in the system and doubly occupied sites. Okay, so it's just you've just perturbed the wave function a bit, and it is an insulator still. If you like, the upper and lower Hubbard band instead of the upper Hubbard band instead of being up at infinity is down at some finite but still above the lower Hubbard band. Okay, if you want to think in terms of that picture. Okay, now you can write this interaction. Let's see, how do I want to do this? You could write it as, for instance, S1 plus S2 squared over minus 2 over 2. Okay, why is that? Because S1 plus S2 squared is, remember, this is just S times S plus 1. So if S is 1, so this is equal to 2. For triplets, and 0 so that's that. And then, if you multiply that out, so what happens when you multiply this out? You get S1 squared, which is 3/4, plus S2 squared, which is 3/4, plus 2S1 dot S2, minus 2 over 2, And so that turns out to be minus a quarter. What is that? Yeah. So this thing here is called J. It's the exchange interaction. And the important thing is that it's antiferromagnetic. In other words, J positive means that the spins want to be in a singlet. So what you'd like to do now is derive the effective Hamiltonian for the solid. Let's say less than or approximately equal to one electron per site. So you could consider more than one electron per site, and there'd be some symmetrical argument. But just for the sake of simplicity and thinking about things, let's imagine that we have a system which is maybe half filled, one electron per site, or maybe slightly less than half filled. And basically, what we'd like to do is we'd like to derive an effective Hamiltonian for the spin behavior of that system, assuming that the atoms either can't move because every site is occupied, or you might have a few empty sites, and electrons can move from an occupied site to an empty site, which is like a hole moving the other way. So there can be a little bit of motion. Okay, but those are the possibilities. You'd like to derive an effective Hamiltonian assuming that there is no actual double occupancy. Okay, so that they never actually have two electrons per site. So this is, if you like, the equation of motions, equations of motion, or the Hamiltonian, for this lower Hubbard band when it's either full or almost full. Okay, that's the idea. Yeah.
So if it's full,
if the whole band is half full, and then we've got strong repulsion.
Exactly.
On average.
On average. Okay.
Right. And then as you, it's coming from the other direction, you crank up the interaction, the repulsive interaction, to make it progressively more difficult. I mean, if you just start out with band theory and calculate the probability that there's two electrons per site, it's some number, like, I don't know, a quarter or something. Okay. I mean, that there's more than one per site because they're all spread out equally. As you crank up the repulsive interaction, that will become less and less probable. At a certain point, the system will go into a state where there is no actual double occupancy. Okay. And then you can say, okay, yeah, but what if then I remove some electrons? That actually gives the remaining electrons some room to move around. Or alternatively, you can say that the holes that you create can move around. Counter moving electrons.
You're increasing the
Yes, this is all with large repulsive, this is all in the limit of the large. So basically, what we're talking about is what happens in systems where there is this large repulsion for two electrons occupying the same site. How do the electrons move? And already you can intuit that they're not going to move like quasi-particles in a Fermi electric. Okay? It's possible that, you know, in this limit of large on-site repulsion, that, you know, Landau's Fermi liquid picture actually breaks down. Okay, and that's where the interesting physics lies. So actually, it's interesting. I just wanted to mention how you would derive this effect of Hamiltonian. I won't go through the entire calculation, because it's actually related to a technique that you already learned. So let's look at this Hamiltonian. Call this your kinetic energy. Call this U. Oh, sorry, I wanted to give a reference for this. There's a very nice website of Jonathan Kill. At Cambridge. Does anyone know Jonathan Kill? I don't know him, okay, but I just came across this. We'll post the link. And he has a lecture series on quantum magnetism, which on the, you know, the more I look at it, the nicer it looks. Right? So this derivation is based on his approach. So what we'd like to do calculate a transformed Hamiltonian call this transformation?
Oh,
canonical transformation method. Free for Wolf, or
I believe for this particular model, it doesn't have any name.
Okay,
it is a free for Wolf.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's right. Yeah. Okay, this is the same thing, the kind of thing that you use to derive the effective electron-phonon interaction. And so what are these? So these two things add up to the kinetic energy. And the point is that there's two kinds of hopping, assuming you have some holes, say. There's the kind of hopping where an electron moves from an occupied site to an empty site. And that does not change the number of doubly occupied sites. And so that is diagonal in HU. doesn't add a U to the total energy. And then, so this preserves number of doubly occupied sites. And hence it's diagonal in this. And then this is the opposite, changes. So that's all diagonal. So the point is that if you start out, if you're unperturbed Hamiltonian as the Hubbard thing, which just counts the number of doubly occupied sites, the kinetic energy can change that with electrons move around. Sometimes some terms in the kinetic energy don't change it, some terms do. So this diagonal part, if you like, you can think of it as having two pieces to it. One is hopping the poles. So for instance, if you have an empty site and an occupied site, this can go to an occupied site and an empty site. So if you like, the hole has moved to the right. And you can also have hopping. of doublets. Like that, you have this doubly occupied site hop to the right. Okay. And well, this thing has two parts. You can either, I don't know whether this is the right way of saying it. You can either put the hole on the right or the hole on the left. Or you can go from singly occupied to doubly occupied and vacant, or you can go the other way. So, if you expand out the exponentials here, So, and you want to define S Sorry, oh, the off-diagonal term. So why do you want to do that? If you define a transformation that causes these two terms to cancel off, then you've gotten rid of your lowest order off-diagonal in the Coulomb interaction. Okay, so in this basis that we'd like to work in, where it's the Coulomb energy that we're counting. So the Coulomb energy, for instance, if there are no doubly occupied sites, is zero. And we'd like to work in, say, in that manifold and find an effective Hamiltonian for that manifold. If we do the transformation that causes these two terms to cancel, then we're left with the Coulomb interaction, which could be zero, say. We're left with the diagonal part of the kinetic energy, which doesn't change the occupation of sites, just moves holes around. And then we're whatever comes out of these two terms. Okay. Now, what do we expect here? If you look at this, you can see that this thing vanishing means that S is of order T over U. Right? This is of order T and this is of order U. And so if you look at these terms here, these terms will be of order over U. And all the other terms that I've thrown away will be of order T cubed over U squared or higher. Okay, so I'm not going to go through the algebra at this point, or in this class. But the result is you've got the diagonal part of the kinetic energy. Plus other things. Okay? So let me start by making sure that you know what this is. actually, it's a half. This is the spin density expressed in terms of these fermion operators and the Pauli matrices. Okay, I don't know if everyone's familiar with that, but you can just work it out and see that it does everything that it's supposed to. So that's the first statement. Now, before we get into the other things, let's just talk for a minute about what's buried in this expression that I've written. Okay? So for instance, you might say, whatever happened to the Coulomb interaction? Why isn't that there? Okay? So the reason why that isn't there is because it's just a constant by assumption. This is the effective Hamiltonian for the motion of electrons with the constraint that they don't change the number of doubly occupied sites. So the Coulomb interaction won't change. And in particular, for a problem of great interest, which is that you have at most one electron per site, then that term is exactly zero. And as long as the electrons and holes move around and preserve that, which is what this effective Hamiltonian is supposed to describe, then the Coulomb interaction is just zero at that cost. Now, the problem is that the meaning of these fermion operators is now actually different from what it was when we had real electrons, because a real electron destruction followed by creation can actually hop an electron onto an already occupied site. Okay. So buried in here is a shorthand, which is to say that it's like this hopping Hamiltonian, but it's projected onto the states with no double occupancy. And in fact, that's an important idea in this theory of correlated electrons, and I probably will come up again on Friday. In fact, there's even a mathematical and quasi-numerical technique for doing this, which is called Goetz-Wöhler projection, which means you take some Hamiltonian and put Goetz-Wöhler projection operators on both sides of it, which means that it can never take you into a doubly occupied state. Okay. Now, the price you pay, of course, is that what that really means is some extremely complicated many-body interacting Hamiltonian. It's not just electrons moving around. Okay, and we'll refer occasionally to how that is actually dealt with. Okay, so what have we got here? What we've got here says that if you have two neighboring sites are occupied, then there is a spin exchange interaction between them, and this constant also depends on them both being occupied. Okay, otherwise it's zero. So that's what these terms mean. What about other things? Okay, so this is of order t squared. This is 4t squared over u as before. That's what comes out of the calculation. So the other things contains two kinds of terms. There are actually other terms that are of order t squared over u. Let me just write that. That contain operators involving three sites. So the labels I, J, and K basically appear in each term. And what these terms do basically is to allow a hole to move two steps. Okay? I mean, the reason why I'm not writing them down is because it's complicated. The reason why I didn't derive it is because it's complicated. And you can read about it in those beautiful notes. And you can also read this explanation, which I actually found quite interesting. But basically what he's saying is that these three-body terms don't really do very much because all they do is modify the kinetic energy of a hole. They add an extra second neighbor hopping term. And the hopping of holes already appears in order T. So it's not very important to make a T squared over U correction to the kinetic energy of holes. So that those terms are typically ignored. If you want to do something that's exact, in other words, if you can have a computational method that allows you to project exactly into the singly occupied manifold, and you want to just, you know, really nail the calculation, you would put those terms in. So that's some of these terms. And then further terms.
Make a jump of
I think it goes to a second neighbor site on the square.
So does it pass, like, do we need to care about the intermediate?
No. That's all been projected out. So this is actually hopping. I think what it is it can hop to a second neighbor site if the one nearby is occupied. But otherwise, it can't, or something like that.
Because I was doubting why we need three indices.
What's that?
Why we need three indices.
You need three indices. that hole hopping depends on whether, the third site is occupied or empty. Okay. And like I said, for the details, I refer you to those numbers. But that's the kind of thing. So, but I mean, I think it's actually important to recognize the fact that this is not the only T squared over U term in the effective Hamiltonian. And it's actually interesting why you don't have to pay too much attention to the others, and everything else is higher order. And so this is an effective Hamiltonian for. Okay, so it's getting late, and so I want to stop in a second. Let me just say what I wanted to look at is the next topic, short topic, and that is the fact that right away you can see. Even in the nearest neighbor of Hubbard model, that there is an effective attractive interaction for singlet pairs on neighboring sites. And therefore you can see that superconductivity could come out of even this completely repulsive interaction. Okay? So that's one thing. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, just going back to our model Hamiltonian, is that if in addition to that, you could also have a direct attractive interaction between nearest neighbor sites in the extended Hubbard model. And that could also give rise to pairing on neighboring sites and hence superconductivity. So what we'll do next time is we'll look at a simple model, believe me, this will be simple calculations of the mean field Hamiltonian that describes pairing on nearest neighbor sites, and talk about D-wave superconductivity, which is the kind that we get in time to see. Okay.